Good morning. I'm going to call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order for Tuesday, March 26, 2024. There is a quorum present. We'll start with the approval of the minutes from March 21, 2024. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
So moved.
Thank you, Chair Freiberg. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for March 21st, 2024 are adopted. Next, we will have House File 3345 with Representative Gordon. Since you're not a member of the committee, I'll move that House File 3345 be before us, and it is our intention to lay this bill over. Okay. So if you would like to describe the bill for us, please begin.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is a repealer. It repeals the law that preempts cities and counties and other political subdivisions from enacting bag ban ordinances. This bill does not enact a statewide policy regarding bags, but gives this tool to cities and counties looking to combat waste, littering, and harmful effects of plastics. You might recall our discussion around packaging last week. Might have been a while before, but I'll remind you that plastics is a top public health concern. Toxics in plastic cause disruptions to human endocrine systems. Microplastics have been found in human blood, amniotic fluid, and breast milk. We also have to deal with the effects of dealing with our waste once we've used them. We are seeing more prevalent asthma and upper respiratory illness as a result of burning garbage near trash incinerators. Furthermore, when plastic bags break down in landfills, that goes into our soil and water and then goes into the food we eat and the water that we drink. I will remind you of my favorite fact from this year, which is that the average American consumes a credit card worth of plastic every week. Plastic bags are a littering concern. I heard that from folks in this committee, and I've heard this in other committees as I've worked on waste issues. We see them pretty much everywhere. I've had one in a tree in my yard for about a week now. I think with the storm, it is now unfortunately disintegrated and is now probably in Minneapolis's sewage system somewhere. They also, when they go into our into the machines in our MRFs and in our landfills, they gum those up and cause major damage to those machines that are actually working to sort and deal with our waste as well. They cram up our lakes and our roadways, and that further damages our environment. Cities and counties are looking for more tools to deal with waste. This is one tool we can give them by simply getting out of their way. And I will also remind committees that it is cities and counties, and ultimately the people that live in those cities and counties, that bear the cost burden for dealing with waste. And with that, Madam Chair, I think we should go to testimony.
Great. We have several people who have signed up to testify today. We'll begin with Indira Falana.
She is not here yet.
She's not here yet? Okay, we can come back to her. How about Ivana Stark? When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Chair Cleburne and members of the committee, I'm Ivana Stark, State Director of Clean Water Action, and I represent 132,000 Minnesota members who care passionately about protecting the water we drink, cook with, and play in. We support repealing the current plastic bag preemption in state statute. It prohibits cities and counties from being empowered to make their own decisions to best serve their communities. It pulls local control away from elected mayors, city council members, and commissioners. Repealing this preemption is not the same as a statewide ban. While this preemption is in place, a message is sent that Minnesota doesn't care about sustainability and moving away from its dependence on single-use plastics. It shuts down the conversations around solutions for plastic waste before they start. Repealing the statute is not the same, again, as imposing a statewide ban. Opponents of repealing this preemption and reinstating local control will tell you that it will lead to chaos and confusion. They'll claim that local control will confuse consumers who won't understand how to shop, and they'll paint a picture of an exaggerated chaos caused by a simple plastic bag. I have more faith in consumers than that. In fact, the California Grocers Association's VP of Government Relations and Chief Lobbyist said that, quote, people are really starting to accept that they bring reusable bags with them when they go to the grocery store. The Montana legislature passed HB 407 in 2021, which bans cities and towns from passing ordinances or citizens from passing ballot initiatives to regulate single-use plastics. A few weeks ago, Montana's first judicial district court ruled this law unconstitutional. The court referred to the state of Montana's argument as a, quote, patently absurd inversion of elementary principles of constitutional supremacy. Our cities and county commissions are asking for more tools in their toolboxes to combat the waste problem we're all struggling with. Repealing this preemption does just that. This is a common sense approach towards a more sustainable future while protecting local control. Thank you, Representative Jordan, for working on this, and thank you all for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony. We appreciate your being with us today. Next, we have Bruce Newstead. Welcome to the committee. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Super. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Jordan, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Newstead. I'm with the Minnesota Retailers Association. We're a collection of about 1,200 storefronts across the state, including Main Street retailers, regional retailers, and national brands. I'm here to share today to share our opposition to House File 3345, removing the ban on the prohibition on the ban on merchant banks at the local level. However, that opposition does come with a big asterisk. Our policy position on this matter is fairly straightforward. We oppose the bank ban repeal. However, connected to that, we hope to support a future statewide solution that offers consistency for consumers, uniformity for retailers, and is in development partnership with all stakeholders. So I'll just delve into those very briefly for you. First, a repeal should only be done when a statewide approach is adopted. We believe that the decisions of this magnitude impacting retailers, customers, suppliers, and many others should be done holistically and at the statewide level rather than through differing local ordinances. This ensures clarity, predictability, and avoids confusion for all parties involved. Next, a statewide solution is important for consumers as consistency is crucial for fairness and expectations. Consumers should not face varying regulations, practices, depending on their location at a store in Minnesota. A statewide approach really ensures that all consumers are treated equally and that they know what to expect regardless of where they shop. Third, uniformity for retailers across the state creates a system where cost disparities for retailers and consumers are avoided and, again, addresses the fairness issue. When retailers operate under consistent regulations statewide, they can plan more effectively, ensure they're good partners in compliance, and prevent unnecessary financial burdens that could ultimately be passed on to consumers. And last, any statewide approach to bags should be developed with all stakeholders, including advocates, retailers, and consumers. Collaboration among these groups is really essential to crafting a comprehensive and balanced solution that takes into account diverse perspectives and concerns. So, Madam Chair, thanks for the opportunity to share this with the committee today. Just to wrap up, if a local prohibition is repealed, it should only be done alongside a well-thought-out statewide plan that addresses the needs of all stakeholders. We are committed and ready to engage in that constructive conversation that creates a solution that works for everyone and meets our sustainability and environmental goals. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, and we appreciate your testimony today. Next, we will have Steve Stubert. Welcome to the committee, and when you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Well, thank you. My name is Steve Stuber. I want to thank the committee for giving me the opportunity to testify and Representative Jordan for bringing this bill forward. You can find plastic bags in storm drains, along fences, stuck in trees, lakes, highways, and many other places. I think we all can agree that plastic bags are literally everywhere. I was the county solid waste administrator for over 20 years. I know that plastic bags are a big problem at materials recycling facilities, otherwise called MRF. This is where all your recycling goes to get sorted, gets caught up in all the machinery. The staff has to shut down the facility several times a day just to cut it out, put this bag in all the belts and screens. It's also a huge problem at landfills. And you can, they get there and they're just blowing everywhere. This, you know, they have to spend a lot of time cleaning these up around the perimeter and beyond the perimeter of the landfill. There are places to take your plastic bags for recycling, but quite often these bags are only used once and thrown away. There are options such as reusable bags that we can bring to the store and use over and over again. It's just a matter of changing our behavior. Right now, cities and counties in Minnesota are prohibited from passing local bans on single-use plastic bags. We need to restore local control so they have an option to deal with the issues plastic bags are creating. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to this bill today.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate your being here so early in the morning. Next, we will have Jamie Poole.
Good
Good morning. Welcome to the committee. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Chair Cleburne, members of the committee, Representative Jordan. I'm Jamie Poole, president of the Minnesota Grocers Association, and we appreciate the opportunity to voice our concerns this morning. Minnesota has a unique culture of hundreds of hometown grocers and convenience stores, many of who are independent, multi-generationally, and locally owned. They create jobs, support local charities, provide a safe and responsible shopping experience. We're their trade association. We have over 300 members with 1,300 locations statewide, as well as wholesale manufacturers and distributors. The MGA and its members are incredibly proud to be part of the communities we serve. As an industry, we take our role as an environmental steward seriously. Our members are innovators when it comes to packaging, recycling, and repurposing. The Minnesota food industry is a leader in voluntary recycling and is dedicated to aggressive waste reduction. For over a decade, we have voluntarily encouraged our shoppers to reduce, reuse, and recycle by offering plastic recycling at our locations. It's a convenient drop spot. Millions of pounds of plastic are recycled annually by your local grocers. These recycled products are not just bags used at our stores. They're also plastic products and bags used within the home. It's an excellent community service, as curbside is not an option for these products. The conversation today regarding removing the prohibition on merchant bags is concerning. Local bag restrictions have potential to interfere with the many outstanding voluntary efforts underway. They have shown a minuscule impact on litter and reducing waste and create a multitude of unintended consequences. City-by-city policy approaches create a direct market disadvantage to local businesses cities strive to promote. As an incredibly mobile society, consumers will make choices that fit their needs and pocketbooks. We want to be clear that our number one concern as an industry is the effect the patchwork of ordinances will have on our customers. Operating in an environment of varying local laws will cause customers confusion, has the potential to have inequitable effect on those that do not have the same mobility or access as others within our communities. The conversations this year around repurposing, recycling, and responsibility are wide-reaching. We have boat wrap, extended producer responsibility, electronics, bottle bills, organics waste, just to name a few. And we honestly don't understand why today's bill would look to create a city-by-city patchwork when other conversations are focused on statewide recommendations. The retail food industry prides itself on the ability to ensure our consumers have the convenience and choices that they need and deserve in their shopping experiences. Proposals like this have the potential to move us in the opposite direction, sometimes with regressive results. We've spoken with Representative Jordan, and appreciate her time and understanding. We look forward to looking at other states and finding some trends that would make sense. And we are happy to be a stakeholder and look forward to working together. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate you. I will go back to Indira Falana. Okay, is there anyone else in the public who wishes to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, we'll go into member discussion. Okay, members, Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Jordan. The question I have on this is, when we talk about banning bags and merchant bags and what that defines as a retailer myself, you know, if I order egg rolls and the manufacturer sends little bags with it, if I order in certain food products to sell to my customers, or if they're buying muffins or donuts, they're putting them in bags to carry them to the counter. How are we going to define this? If we give this to local control, I'm really concerned on this, because I think what's going to happen is local control thinks they're making the right step of banning plastic bags or banning, just putting the word bags out there. And what's that come down to? How are we going to, I think we still need to keep this on the state level, and I think we need to have discussions on how we're going to do this, because if we do give it to local control and all players aren't in the negotiations or talks at the table, I have fear that this is going to interrupt some of these things that we're selling in our retails and possibly cause, you know, understanding of how this whole law works. Can you explain to me how we're going to, if we brought this to local control, how we would be able to guarantee every person in this market is at the table to make sure that it doesn't affect items like that?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Joy. Yeah, that would be up to the, you know, our city council members and our county commissioners. And I have faith in our county commissioners and our city council members, who represent fewer people than we do, to be able to talk to the businesses and constituents that they represent and craft ordinances that work for their community.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I was a mayor for 6 years. I was fortunate to be in retail.
I had a vice mayor that was a law enforcement officer for 22 years. He would never understand, if he was taking this to the table, of what effects are in a retail situation, whether it's, you know, the grocery store or my retail store or my pizza shop, what it took. And I think this needs a lot of work before we even think about moving it to local control. And I guess I hope we could work together on this and try to get this in a better setting. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joy. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne. Representative Jordan. I don't really have a question, but I just have a comment about the bill. And I think it's really commendable that we are tackling the littering problem that seems to be persistent amongst a variety of people that potentially don't care about the environment. I mean, we see that. But on the one hand, I see this bill as more local control, which is a good thing. Counties and cities can decide what is best for their city. But on the other hand, I potentially see this bill from a consumer point as being borderline anti-consumer and anti-business, because you're taking away their choice as to what the people that come to their business, what they want. If people wanted to use the reusable bags, and you do see many of them, then the consumer would end up, by the virtue of using reusable bags, that businesses would change over and say, because the customer wants the reusable bags, that's what we're going to. But if cities and counties enact different ordinances, I see confusion for the consumer. And if they're upset, they're not going to come to the city or the county with the ordinance. They're going to go to the business owner and potentially hurting that particular business. So I think that this bill does need some work. I mean, there probably are some good things with it, that we do need to recycle more. And at this moment, I just can't support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like any comments, Representative Jordan? We have one more.
Let's just keep going, Madam Chair.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan. Nobody wants the trash that's blowing around. So I appreciate you bringing this. I wonder, however, though. I mean, this goes back a number of years when a city tried to ban plastic bags on its own. Legislature stepped in and said, "Whoa, back up." It's important that we have an even approach to, you know, how we regulate some of our businesses and allow consumers to purchase goods. And I was hoping that, you know, while this, I mean, I think what you're trying to repeal here is I don't agree with it. And I don't agree with it from a standpoint that it's not going to solve, you know, trying to ban bags in a city. Some political subdivision decides to ban that bag. Another political subdivision isn't going to. You know, this isn't a local control issue. This is a plastic is not the problem issue. Waste management is the problem issue. So you can ban bags and pretend that that's going to solve the problem when it's going to remove options for consumers and businesses, or it's kind of like we have there's state statutes. The state statutes right now that require people to pay money to recycle compost. They have to. There's no option. They have to do it. So there's a lot of people that don't want to. There's a lot of people that don't need to. There's a lot of people that don't produce this. And so, you know, the few people that may need plastic bags that go to the store, I think is a viable option. The language that you're repealing is literally, let me read it. All merchants, itinerant vendors, peddlers doing business in the state shall have the option to provide customers a paper, plastic, or reusable bag for the packaging of any item or good purchased. And it goes on just a little bit. That's, you know, I go to different stores that have different options. You know, some of them don't provide any bags. You have to bring your own. I choose to go to that store because I value that in some cases. So I think removing options for people, pretending that we're going to solve our waste management problem by having a haphazard approach to which political subdivisions want to ban plastic, I think is not even hopeful. I don't think it's a step in the right direction. I don't think it's going to solve the problem. And, you know, our job here is to try to keep those knee-jerk reactions that happen at local government. I mean, we just look at what happened recently with Uber Lyft in Minneapolis. Look at the problem that that's being caused. One local subdivision has decided that they should be able to determine how we can access rideshare across the metro. And somebody could argue that, you know, that the providers are making that choice, and I get it. But that's our job, is to balance those things. And I think repealing this statute removes choices. It's going to hurt consumers. It's obviously going to hurt business. And it's not going to solve the waste problem that we have with plastic. So thank you.
We'll go to Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Jordan, I was trying to remember the statistic. How much plastic do we eat?
Representative Jordan.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, it's not only what we eat, it's also what we take in through our skin, what we drink in our water, and other ways. But the average American takes into their body a credit card's worth of plastic each week.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Hansen.
And Madam Chair and Representative Jordan, do we have a choice on that? Do we have options on how much we're going to take in? Do we have stakeholder meetings on how much plastic we can consume?
Representative Jordan.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen. Well, I don't voluntarily eat a credit card worth of plastic. That is plastic that is in the water that I drink, because it ended up there through all of these just different things that we have plastic for. We take it in through our food, where there are films that are on top of it. They come off through the plastic bags that we put our food in at the grocery store. It comes in through the air that we breathe. It comes in through soils that end up in our food. So there's lots of different ways that it gets into all of our bodies, and we are unaware of that.
Representative Hansen.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, frankly, just a comment, where Representative Hewitt represents, and when we drive along 52 and go through Dakota County, we now have very large hills of garbage. The landfills are now mountains, and they're going to get taller.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think a couple folks here will remember that I was the author of the ban on the ban back in 2017, And I asked myself a lot of questions as I was moving that legislation along, and I won't ask her to come down, but Ms. Poole did share at the time that I think it's north of 93 or 95% of all grocery stores offer a methodology to recycle plastic bags. So that's an important metric for us to remember, that these do get recycled. So not every plastic bag goes blowing in the wind. It's not Bob Dylan songs for everybody. It is something that I think a lot of consumers value, their opportunity to have that choice. I think I was telling the chair on we have often calls the day before committee. My wife has this unnatural love affair with canvas bags, and every year we have like a decommissioning service at our house where I force her to get rid of some of the ones, and I go to trade shows and I bring new ones back, but not everybody has that ability to bring in those reusable bags. There are lots of stories of people who live in settings where they're pretty tight, and having a plastic bag be something that's available for them to bring their groceries home in is a valuable thing that we need to protect. I am concerned with the relative certainty of the patchwork that will get created, particularly for companies that have, in my circumstance, one of my constituents is McIntoon's Grocery. I believe they are the oldest grocery store in operation in the state of Minnesota. And they've got grocery stores in multiple locations. So they got one in Waconia. They have a new one on Highway 7 out in the Minnetrista area. They have some down south. They have one, I believe, in Jordan. The problem that this could potentially create for them is that they're buying for the entire enterprise, and now this is going to create a difficulty for them to operate in as uniform a manner as they would like. Again, I think that the ban, or as staff has now called it, when I passed my bill, it was the ban, and now we are the ban. I feel like we're in a Flintstones cartoon. With bam bam, but I think that what this creates is a difficult patchwork for retailers to live up underneath. And as Representative Nadeau pointed out, there are oftentimes decisions that are made that wind up being capricious and create difficulties for the entire state. And while I did hear that that sometimes decisions made local are always best, I was describing this to somebody, sometimes city councils and county boards are at the 5,000 foot level, but the legislature is at a 50,000 foot level. And I think that that's an important distinction that we need to make, is that we are trying to make sure that commerce operates evenly across the state of Minnesota. And I just think that this is not something that we want to overturn. I again know that these are infinitely recyclable. My wife does take the bags to be recycled when bags that kids use or bring into the house or whatever, if she forgets her cannabis bags. They do go to the recycling bin at McIntune's, and I think they take them, well, pretty much everywhere. And I just think that this is a difficult playing field that we are creating for our retailers, much like Representative Joy talked about, much like Representative Harder and Representative Nadeau talked about. This is not going to fix the problem. The problem is in people who are lazy and throw things out the window or don't do their job properly. So I think that that's a very important distinction that we need to make. And I believe, Madam Chair, we are laying this over.
We are laying this over.
Okay, so I don't get to vote no, but if and when, I will vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. And so as you know, Representative Jordan, I used to live in Brazil, and Sao Paulo banned bags. Sao Paulo is a massive city, 20 million people plus, and the grocery stores still functioned, and we were able to bring our groceries home. And people knew that they needed to bring something, a cardboard box, a market basket, something to bring their groceries home. And I think every Thursday when I go out to my yard after recycling day and I have to pick up all the plastic bags, I think if we had to bring our own bags, people would be more careful about where they kept their bags. So I do appreciate the legislation, and I will turn it over to you for closing comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just try to wrap up a few of the comments. There was a question about, like, why would local government be, you know, in charge of making some of these waste decisions? Well, local government is in charge of paying for a waste problem. That is something that our counties pay for. And so if counties are looking for tools to deal with their massive waste problems as their incinerators run at their full capacity and our landfills are filling up, cities are looking at many tools, and cities have been at the legislature this year in a way that I haven't seen before, and I haven't been here for very long, but cities are really, and counties are here asking for tools to deal with their waste problem. This bill isn't one bill to solve all of our waste problems, but that's why there are many, many waste management bills. We've heard a number of them in the Environment Committee, and I know you've heard a number of them in this committee. I know because I've presented some of them. And so there are many tools that we're looking at, and this is just one of those tools to deal with one sector of our waste problem. So I also think, Madam Chair, the consumers are smart. They get it. You know, the city of Boston and the city of Philadelphia both have plastic bag bans in place while the surrounding states don't. I think that Minnesota consumers are as smart, if not more smart, especially after living in Minneapolis when there was a Super Bowl with many Philadelphia and Boston fans in town. I think people in Minnesota are smart and can deal with this, especially if people in other major metropolitan areas have these bag bans when their surrounding states do not. Many other states also do have bag bans. Importantly, this is not actually a bag ban. Even though this bill, the bill that is being repealed was offered in some ways in an attempt to deal with one city, my city, Minneapolis, looking at this plastic bag ban, the city of Minneapolis would still need to go back and revise that ordinance based off of this repeal or become law, the city of Minneapolis would need to revise that ordinance. So this would not automatically put in bag bans anywhere. So all of the communities in the state would have to go back and do that work with their communities to come up with solutions that work with them. And with that, I think it's an important bill. I think it's a good bill, and it's just another tool in our toolbox to deal with our mounting waste problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, members, we will lay over House File 3345. And Representative Jordan, you have the next bill on the agenda as well, House File 4744. And that, I will move that this bill be re-referred to the General Register. If, when you're ready, if you'll please describe the bill for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just getting my papers organized. Well, thank you, Chair Cleburne, again, and members of the committee. This is another relatively short bill, and it provides the Hennepin County Board with greater oversight over Hennepin Healthcare, their healthcare arm, which runs clinics, and the Hennepin County Medical Center, or HCMC. Hennepin County Board members and employees are asking for this clarifying edit to statute to ensure the Hennepin Healthcare budget has appropriate oversight. This bill clarifies that the Hennepin County Board of Commissioners must have a majority vote to approve the annual budget. This bill only applies to Hennepin County. And with that, Madam Chair, we have a number of testifiers who can better explain the need for this bill and what it would mean for the county.
All right, fine. We will ask Chair Irene Fernando to come forward, please. Welcome to the committee, Chair Fernando. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Chair Cleburne and members, my name is Irene Fernando. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm chair of the Hennepin County Board. I want to thank the bill author, Representative Jordan, and the Minnesota Nurses Association for bringing this legislation forward. In December last year, my colleagues and I took action to ensure Hennepin Healthcare System, also known as HCMC, and their 2024 budget meets the accountability and transparency expectations that we expect from public institutions. As chair of the Hennepin County Board, I am proud that we are the only local government-owned level one safety net health system in the entire state of Minnesota. Hennepin Healthcare is a critical resource, not only for Hennepin County, but for the entire state. That's why it's imperative that we listen to the people, to the workers who are the front line of keeping our community healthy. This change in statute will give the board clarity and better oversight in our role managing our hospital and reflects your legislative intent. The structure of our ownership and the expectation around oversight are spelled out in statute, section 383B, starting in section 901. We are exercising the tools the legislature has provided us. We welcome any and all additional tools to exercise oversight that you might grant me and my colleagues on the Hennepin County Board. I appreciate the trust you have in our ability to ensure that every public dollar the residents of Minnesota sent to us are spent on improving health outcomes. We know that is the bedrock. We know that the bedrock to this is investing in our staff. Every person who delivers care to our patients, from maintenance staff up to our nursing staff, and to each and every caregiver. Together, we won't let our staff down. The Hennepin County Board understands this assignment. In so many ways, the health outcomes for all Minnesota depends on a well-run HCMC. And on a personal note, my household is a beneficiary of county hospital employment. My mother and mother-in-law each worked 40 years as county nurses in their respective hospitals, and they raised a total of 7 children on the benefits and the environment provided. So with that, I thank you for your time and consideration and support of House File 4744.
Thank you very much. And next we will have Janelle Johnson, Johnson Teeley. When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Cleburne and committee members. Janelle Johnson Thiel was not able to be here today. My name's Elizabeth Songalia. I'm also a nurse at HCMC. Janelle and has been an RN at Hennepin County Medical Center for 16 years, and she currently works in the birth center. We, the nurses of Hennepin Healthcare, who are represented by the Minnesota Nurses Association, must speak out as devoted advocates for the safety of our patients, the well-being of our community, and the welfare of our tireless workforce. Our concerns are not mere murmurs. They are heartbeats of a committed healthcare team who, day in and day out, give their all to provide exceptional care to those who rely on us. Over the years, Hennepin Healthcare has evolved and faced numerous challenges, but the commitment from the commissioners of Hennepin County has never been more crucial. The heart of our distress stems from the recent Minnesota Department of Health report which disclosed that in 2022, our institution contributed to 10% of all reportable adverse events in the state. These events are not mere statistics. They are tangible, real-world occurrences that impact our patients' lives, our community's trust, and the very essence of our healthcare institution. It is an alarming fact that in a single year, the number of such incidents has doubled, with a staggering 60 adverse events reported in 2022. These occurrences are directly related to staffing shortages, which not only jeopardize patient safety, but also affect our ability to sustain financially. Nurses, the backbone of Hennepin Healthcare, continue to bear the brunt of chronic understaffing, which contradicts expert findings stating that it's not a shortage of nurses, but a shortage of safe, supportive working environment. The fact that we, the nurses, felt compelled to picket in 2022 for the first time ever underscores the gravity of the situation. An internal survey conducted by the Minnesota Nurses Association revealed that a staggering 81% of respondents believe patient safety is at risk. Workplace violence and harassment are rampant, with 97% of nurses reporting such incidents in the past 2 years. But a lack of time, understaffing, and inaction by hospital management deter them from reporting. Under the leadership of Jennifer DeCabellis, our employee benefits were slashed, premiums hiked, and deductibles inflated, leaving our workforce with a heavier burden to bear. This, as the CEO awarded herself a massive raise while claiming a budget crisis, is not just preposterous, but a slap in the face of every nurse, caregiver, and employee who gives their all to this institution. Due to all of this, we see needed change at Hennepin Health System and ensuring that Hennepin County Commissioners have the ability to approve or not approve the budget is a step in the right direction. Please support House File 4744 to help workers and patients at our valued safety net hospital.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we will have Jeremy Olson. I'm going to ask you to pronounce your last name for me.
Good morning, Chair Cleburne and committee members. My name is Jeremy Olson Ellert. I'm a registered nurse at Hennepin County Medical Center and an MNA co-chair where I've been employed the last 10 years. We find ourselves at a pivotal moment where the very essence of our health system is being questioned. Behind the walls of statistics and reports lies the profound truth. The human cost of decisions made without empathy, without understanding, and without public transparency. Let me describe what the recent budget changes mean for HCMC staff. Imagine a mother, a nurse, whose world revolves around the fragile life of her daughter with a rare genetic disorder. Last year, our healthcare plan provided a lifeline, a safety net of support that eased her burden. But now that safety net is unraveling, replaced by the barriers of bureaucracy and increased costs. Her daughter's medication, once easily accessible, is now mired in delays and financial strain. Or consider another nurse who has relied on a specialized medication for over two decades. What was once manageable expense has now become a financial burden, a toll exacted by a system that fails to recognize the value of human life over profit margins. And then there's the reality of delayed care. A nurse's son suffering from horrible allergies waits months for an appointment, only to have it canceled due to circumstances beyond their control. In a system where every moment counts, this delay can mean the difference between comfort and agony. These stories are not isolated incidents, they are echoes of a system in crisis. Yet, when we raise our voices, when we seek accountability, we are met with hostility and indifference from those entrusted with leadership. So much so that when the Hennepin County Board appropriated $8 million to fix our health plans, HHS leadership chose to spend only half of that to slightly improve our health plans, but we do not know where the rest of that money went. We feel that there was no meaningful investment in retaining workers. There was no meaningful plan to reduce agency nurses, all while the hospital board's first action was to again raise the CEO's salary. We have over 100 open nursing positions right now and continue to see more nurses leave every month. During the HHS budget conversations at the end of last year, nurses heard from commissioners that they had deep concerns about the budget and the lack of meaningful investment in workers. This after there was a large investment in federal pass-through dollars that we helped to lobby for at the state legislature and no conversation with direct care staff on what they need in order to provide quality patient care. Yet, the commissioners were informed that they were legally required to pass the budget. This is not how Hennepin Healthcare Systems is supposed to work. But due to the way the language is written in Minnesota statute, there is very little ability for the Hennepin County Commissioners to have meaningful oversight into the budget. We are asking you to make a simple change. Please support House File 4744 and help take a step towards better fiscal accountability and transparency at our public safety net hospital.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony today. I have no other members of the public signed up to testify in advance. Is there anyone here who would like to testify? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to member questions. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And could I have Commissioner Fernando come back up to the table, please?
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, Chair Fernando, my background definitely has seen what your hospital does for not only the county, but also the state. There isn't one place in the state that I have not brought a traumatic or a really sick patient to your facility. My question is that, and the state should partner with you more on this, but is your commitment still there to provide the safety net for the whole state? Now we'd be elevating this to the county level, I'm worried that we, as local, if we work in a vacuum, take care of our own, but you have a bigger responsibility here with that facility. I want you to say it before us or say no to us. Are you committed to continuing your commitment to the state also?
Chair Cleavorn, Rep Hewitt, absolutely. And personally, I like to increase our commitment. This is the last locally owned level one trauma center in the entire state. There's maybe a dozen county-owned hospitals in the country. And I mean, it's kind of incredible to think about that. I did not know that when I entered in my office. And so that's why I'm saying I actually have increased a commitment in ensuring that all Minnesotans have the high quality standardized care of which they deserve and are worthy of. And it is absolutely in the county's interest to ensure that we are looking at the data and carefully creating paths to lessen every single disparity, to increase the social determinants of health, and to ensure that we are a very strong employer for our local residents who, you know, want to have a livelihood here. And I know that the emphasis on the worker aspect is likely associated because we're here. M&A had incredible leadership on this, and of course, Rep. Jordan. But I don't want to overstate my household, my mother-in-law, 40 years as a county nurse, my mom has 40 years as a county nurse. My mother-in-law raised four kids with that county benefit. She was the primary income earner. Same with my mom, who was a recent immigrant at the time. So we need to be a good employer, too. So the short answer, yes, and I invite the accountability from this body and others to ensure that we're living up to that standard for local Minnesotans and Minnesotans across the state, excuse me.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Jordan. I'm going to support this bill today. I think we have to be careful, though. The county board, I mean, currently the relationship that exists is in my experience with the county, the relationships that exist between HCMC and the county board is tight, it's vital, it's super collaborative. I mean, I think we're one of the leading counties in the country on combining health and support services through social services. I think that we lead the nation on some of these things. I think it's also important that we recognize that all of the partnerships that are involved in making something like this work. I mean, the biggest factors that affect our healthcare system today aren't addressed in this committee. They're addressed in health. They're reimbursement rates. They're capitated rates. They're disproportionate share payments. They're uncompensated care components. Our system is incredibly complex. I'm supporting this because I trust the county board. I find it interesting that we're only going to, you know, deal with, you know, Hennepin County statutes with this. I mean, if this is good, then maybe we should look at this as county-based purchasing. But I'm going to support this because I trust the county board. And I trust that the county board is going to step up and do those things that we need to do to keep our trauma hospital operating and step into that space in a system that is struggling. This isn't going to solve our problems with bedside issues. It's not going to solve our problem with 48-hour issues. It's not going to solve our problems with DHS. And I know that you're not trying to do that. But this is complex. This is complex. And I hope that what we're saying today with this right here is that we trust the county board to step in and do the work, not the opposite, that we don't trust the hospital. And that's what I think is important in this case. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Doe. Representative Bonner.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Jordan and Commissioner Fernando. It's no secret, my mother's a 43-year veteran of Hennepin County, and I've been a very big and strong proponent of trying to find ways to improve processes at Hennepin County to make sure that they're solvent, that they have good accountability, that their nurses are well taken care of. They are the backbone. And in this region, they are not only a critical access hospital, they are the only real hospital that serves this population. I mean, their nurses are holding it down day after day, week after week, minute after minute. There is no doubt about that. And I think transparency is good, so I appreciate the sunshine here. But I just wondered if you could speak a little bit about how you plan to balance the responsibility and the insights for the long-term viability of Hennepin Healthcare. I mean, I love, for example, I believe that Ms. DeChambliss does a fantastic job, but 15%. When we have rank and file members of our nursing staff who are struggling to get healthcare, maybe seems a little out of touch when we talk about budgets. And I'm just trying to think about the long term, because without the rank and file, there is no Hennepin healthcare. So just could you speak briefly about how you think that the county board can bring some of that accountability back and sort of balance the needs of the system?
Chair Fernando.
Yes, Chair, Representative, balance is probably not the right word. I think it is to substantively approach the questions that you've raised. It's about staffing, it's about retention, it's about bedside standardized care, and then it's also about the beneficiaries of each household. How does that all intersect in a health system that is structured as a business instead of a service? I mean, that's really what's occurring in the broader healthcare discussion across the country. And I have been privileged to be on the county board for greater than 5 years, and I was appointed to the hospital board about 4 years ago. So the HHS structure is that there are two commissioners appointed to the Hennepin Healthcare System board, and that there's this kind of governance separation. So in that time, I've gotten quite substantively into the weeds here, and for me, at the center of it is this financial trade-off. Who is meant to benefit? So long-term, I believe that the county board is equipped to tackle the questions that you're raising because of our county system. This is a government subsidiary, but it is structured so much like hospitals that are not government subsidiaries. The county board balances its budget every year. We have the largest local budget operating, as well as among the largest from a capital side. And so I don't think balance is the right word, but I think muscle or perhaps leadership commitment is the correct posture. That the county board has approached county government in a certain kind of way and has seen favorable outcomes. How might we apply that to what we are learning at the hospital? Last comment, in December, the action that the county board took were essentially passing the proposed 2024 hospital budget with a number of provisions included. That's the first time we've done something like that exercising that aspect of oversight. And so while there might be existing oversight, what this bill kind of sheds light on is, to the earlier comment with this Hennepin lanyard to my left, that the county needs to exercise the oversight that we have available to us and, you know, in partnership with a lot of discourse and perspective. So I hope that helps to add context to what you're discussing.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you. I appreciate that answer and all of that. I just want to ground us to that. I think the decisions we make in terms of a budget, it's good to have transparency, but the decisions we make, there's a certain optics to what that looks like. And I think when you have a foundation that's built on the employees who are doing the work every day, that matters. It matters a lot. And I hope that the county board will continue to look and take a watchful eye over that balance and make sure that the interests of the employees who are literally the foundation of that institution stay front and center in those decisions when we talk about budget. Thank you.
Chair Fernando.
Yes, Chair, Representative, message absolutely received. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bonner. I think this bill is a collaboration between the county board and those employees. You heard from county employees here earlier. There's letters in your packet from other county employees who strongly support this bill and are asking for this oversight in addition to the county board.
Okay, and I just have to clarify, when speaking of a representative, we can't refer to the lanyard. We have to refer to Representative Nadeau. So I just want to correct the record. I know no disrespect was intended, but we will just clarify that.
I was trying to be funny. Thank you for your indulgence, Representative Chair Cleavorn, and apologies, Representative Nadeau.
I appreciate your humor, and I think probably Representative Nadeau does as well.
I'm so offended. I'm crushed, Madam Chair.
He and I were co-workers for a period, if that helps.
Yes, and I'm sorry, Representative Jordan, was there anything more you wanted to say?
Yes, Madam Chair, I just want to thank members for this discussion. I think this is, I really actually appreciate what Representative Hugh had asked, because we really need HCMC and Hennepin Healthcare to survive and thrive. These are important state assets that not only care for Minnesotans, but also train many healthcare providers who go and work around the state. Hennepin Healthcare is very important to me. I remember getting a COVID vaccine from Hennepin Healthcare and what that did. I also really want to thank the nurses for being here. I had a family member that I love very much go to Hennepin County HCMC with a skull fracture. And those nurses took such good care of him and made sure that he was okay when, you know, his skull was fractured. And not only did they take care of him in that moment, they called him for weeks afterwards to check on the status of his skull. And I mean, just when I was dropping him off at the hospital, like, I could see how busy all of the staff were and all the care they put in. So to know that they are so overworked, but they're still managing to call and check up on patients after they are no longer directly in their care, I think just shows the true level of care and commitment that these nurses have to their patients and to residents of Hennepin County in the state of Minnesota. And so this is, I think, very much a bill that I'm carrying because I care about HCMC, I care about nurses, I care about my constituents who go to the hospital for various reasons. And I think this is the sort of oversight that we all deserve and that we need to make sure that we can continue to serve all Minnesotans.
Thank you very much, Representative Jordan. And with that, I will renew my motion to re-refer House File 4744 to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 4744 is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you so much. Next, we have House File 4025 and Representative Cagle. Representative Cagle, since you're not a member of the committee, I will move that House File 4025 be before the committee. And I understand that you have a substantial A5 amendment. So I'd like to get the bill in the order that you'd like before. So if you'd speak to the A5 amendment, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what the A5 amendment does is move this from a small independent office within the Department of Administration. One of the balances we're trying to do is, you know, bring the fiscal note down. And so with this within the department, that would help reduce the fiscal note as well as help stand the council up quicker. And then, you know, this is kind of admin's wheelhouse here when it comes to kind of some of this infrastructure and sustainability efforts.
All right. Thank you very much. So, members, I'm just going to call a vote to adopt the A5 because it is substantial to the bill. So all of those in favor of adoption of the A5 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Okay. The motion prevails and House File 4025 is amended. Now, we will bring House File 4025 as amended, and I will re-refer this bill to Ways and Means. So with that, if you'll speak to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what House File 4025 does is create the Minnesota Advisory Council on Infrastructure. I think that was the name we settled on. Yep. And so what we're trying to achieve here is right now we have, you know, a lot of this federal money coming into the state, and it's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to really make sure that we're upgrading our infrastructure. And so what we're asking to do is make sure that we are coordinating efforts when it comes to infrastructure projects, so that if a road is getting dug up, that everybody who has assets within that jurisdiction knows what's happening, can coordinate their work. And this is something that we've seen some success with in Michigan. They've had their infrastructure council up for about 5 years. And I really want to see the receipts on this, because they have said that it's between 30% and 40% that they've seen decrease on their infrastructure projects. And so really what this is a non-regulatory body that will help with asset management. One of the first tests we're asking them to do is compile all the different asset management systems that they have across different departments. And then also make sure that we're including people who are really experts in the field of public works, infrastructure, that kind of stuff. And so when, you know, one of my main goals with this is really to make sure that the state of Minnesota is getting the best return on investment when it comes to our infrastructure projects, make sure that we're coordinating efforts, and that when we do it, we're doing it right. I'm sure you guys have all heard about my griddle, and so I will spare you with the griddle analogy again. But this is something that I've been working really hard on with people, you know, both from my side of the aisle and from the Republican side of the aisle. And so, you know, there's been a lot of collaboration and coordination that we've done on this bill. And that's the point, is that we want to make sure that that our assets are being well taken care of, and that when there's projects that are going forward, that they're coordinating, collaborating, and using best practices. That's the bill.
Thank you very much. We do have one member of the public who signed up to testify, Michelle Stockness. Could please come forward.
I have slides.
When you're ready, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your testimony, please.
Good morning, Chair Cleavorn and committee members. I'm Michelle Stockness. I am a registered civil engineer with 20 years experience working on water infrastructure. And today I'm here representing the Minnesota Infrastructure Alliance in support of Bill House File 4025 and the proposed Minnesota Advisory Council on Infrastructure. It's a mouthful. So really quick, who we are. The Minnesota Infrastructure Alliance is a coalition of professional organizations striving to provide and maintain safe and sustainable infrastructure across Minnesota. This is who we are more specifically. There's 19 different organizations involved. You'll see the Public Works Association, Rural Water, Society of Civil Engineers, MnDOT, City Engineers, County Engineers, and such. So a lot of infrastructure groups are working together. My nerdy joke is that I think we're really great at engineering and public works. We're not so great at advocacy and communication, so we're trying to get better about that. So if you'll remember, There was this ASCE infrastructure report card that came out in 2022, and Minnesota got a grade of C. That is not good. C is mediocre and requires attention. So we feel that infrastructure needs more focus in Minnesota, and we'd like to raise these grades up higher. And you'll see some categories even have lower than a C rating. So we can do better than this. We think that the Minnesota Council on Infrastructure will help infrastructure in Minnesota. If you look at a, I have a snip of it here, there's a National Infrastructure Advisory Council, and last year they put out a report of what this sector should do, and one of the top five recommendations was to increase cross-sector coordination, and specifically intelligence sharing and setting common standards. They said that the security and resilience of our critical infrastructure depends on collaboration across sectors, and that significant barriers block effective collaboration. So we feel that the Minnesota Advisory Council on Infrastructure can help us better coordinate and communicate across infrastructure sectors and units of government. And we think that the Council on Infrastructure could help us better compile and communicate our needs and our priorities statewide.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else from the public wishing to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll go to member questions. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne. Representative Cagle, this is something new that I'm reading about. Can you please go through what was being done before we started to do a task force to create the council? How are these... What do you want to call them? How was the construction handled before the task force?
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Harder. So it was a patchwork. Right now we have each department within the state kind of doing their own thing. MnDOT's building an asset management tool. Admin has their Office of Sustainability or Sustainable Enterprise, which they're doing really great things internally. So looking at state buildings and state assets and trying to make them as efficient and resilient as possible. And so the idea is really that, you know, we need to take that idea or that and go look outwards and make sure that our small communities have what they need to make sure that their infrastructure projects are going to succeed, that we can coordinate with, you know, between assets like utilities and water and roads on projects. And so that if a road is being redone and there's no broadband conduits there, we can lay conduits, you know? Just kind of thinking about what's going to make this better 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and how can we make sure that what we're doing is actually maintaining the assets that we have. You know, I've heard from the bonding chair, members of the bonding committee that, you know, they've been going around the state and seeing all these crumbling assets. And so we really need to also think about, like, what does it take to maintain and operate that as well? And so really just kind of looking at long-term planning. But before, it's kind of like everyone on their own. And so Michigan is kind of the first state that took this collaborative approach across departments. And they built this asset management champion program that communities from across the state have taken advantage of. And just the price reduction, or, you know, the reduction in cost that they've seen on their infrastructure projects. And then, you know, I just also think about, like, you know, if we fix it right the first time, it's going to be saving taxpayers money down the road as well. So that's kind of the idea of this bill, is to take that patchwork and coordinate it and have them collaborate a little bit more, a lot more.
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne. My next question is there a current department or agency now that can absorb this idea, because I'm reading the fiscal note on it, and it's pretty expensive. So is there currently an agency or a department now that could absorb this process?
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Harder. So that was kind of some of the idea about moving it over to admin. The fiscal note was ran on the original language where it was standing up an independent office. So with moving it to the Department of Admin, we're going to have we've requested a revised fiscal note so that we can get that for Ways and Means and hopefully reduce the fiscal note by housing it within that department.
Representative Harder.
Thank you. My next question is this really pertaining to state projects, or will this council eventually work towards local projects will have to utilize the council?
Representative Cable.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is a non-regulatory advisory council that will help collaborate between public and private assets across the state, and also offer asset management best practices to those communities. I hope that answered your question. Mm-hmm. What was the question? I'm sorry.
Right, Representative Harder.
Well, the question stems for, I'm assuming or guessing that this is mainly towards state projects, state assets, and so the question was, will this cycle down to our local projects?
Representative Cable.
Madam Chair, Representative Hart, it will go down. So the what it is it's actually coordinating between public and private assets, and so there's, you know, it's completely voluntary, and so the local entities can participate if they want to. I think, you know, having participated in an asset management course would help, you know, maybe with some of getting funding for some of those infrastructure projects, whether it's through the, you know, the IIJA, the IRA, or through departments from the state or even locals, you know. And so I think what this does is really make sure that the return on investment goes all the way down from, you know, the state to townships, counties. And if you look at the people who are voting members, it really kind of reflects, you know, we've added recommendations that the appointing members can look to as far as who should be a voting member on the board. And so really we do want to make sure that there's representation from across the state in all asset sectors. And so that's another reason, too, where we did the appointments of the voting members are, you know, they have to be 50-50 between Metro and Greater Minnesota.
We're going to move on to Representative Hewitt.
Thank you. And if Ms. Stockness could come back up real quick.
You want me to come back? I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
No, it's okay. Thank you, Chair. Okay. Madam Chair, Ms. Stockness, in light of what happened last night in Maryland, this is another reason we need the smart people in the room. And that's what I imagine that's what we're getting at here. And just a technical question, when you have the smart people in the room, Maryland will be shut down for a while, as we were when Minneapolis had their bridge go down. Are there contingency plans that go into the thinking of an engineer when they look at this and now shipping shut down to say, okay, if this happens, we can go this route or this route? Is that part of the engineering planning? I'm just curious because this came up this morning on the news, and I've thought, oh, this is a really good question. Something like this happened in Duluth or something. Are we going to be shut down shipping and commerce? Is that taken into consideration when you do planning?
If you address the question, please.
Madam Chair and Committee, well, I'm a water engineer. I'm not a bridge engineer, a transportation engineer. We're very segmented in what we do. I would think on behalf of, you know, infrastructure engineers, there's contingency plans in place all the time for things. And I think, you know, how maybe changing the question a little bit, how, you know, if we can communicate what we need as infrastructure engineers better and roll it up statewide, we can make sure that maintenance needs and capital projects and things are done in time. That bridge situation that happened in Baltimore might be a totally different, just terrible accident. I'm not sure of those details. But I do think that, you know, most engineers plan with a lot of contingency, yes.
Thank you. And Representative Hewitt, I know that you have great respect for our state employees and our state engineers, correct?
Madam Chair, I was just going to say that, but I think this is exactly why that whenever you have it's important, to have the smart people in the room, and some of these people are employees, and that's important to have the right players in the room so we do have making sure we're using the best equipment, best materials, best labor, but also that if something does fail, like last night was an accident, I'm sure, that we have a contingency plan so the state can continue to function. And that's why I was trying to get at this, that I just had to ask the question, and I appreciate the answer. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And next we'll go to Representative Cos. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And also, I think part of this is really we want to look at the resiliency of our infrastructure as well. And so, you know, that accident last night, you know, that's kind of a one-off. But what we are seeing is a lot of weather-related incidences. And so making sure that our infrastructure can handle our, you know, our new norm, I guess, and then that we can make sure that Minnesotans can still move around and still get their mail and still have internet and electricity and water and all the things that we need and anticipate some of the kind of more inclement weather that we're seeing.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Cagle, good to have you in committee. We used to work on transportation together, but we will probably in the future, I hope. With regard to your bill, I understand that there was a task force that met in the interim, kind of a large task force. Can you share with the committee the work of that task force?
Representative Cagle, in a brief summary, because we have 15 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Kosnick. So this is the bill is kind of a summary of the work that we did. And so we had, you know, a lot of the folks that are on the list on page 4 in the room telling us what they needed and what kind of resources that the state could provide to make sure that they're getting their needs met. And so we worked really hard through that process to figure out, you know, how it could be fair, who should be at the table, and whether it should be, you know, one of the big things is that we wanted to make sure it was non-regulatory and it was advisory. And so, you know, I've had lots of meetings with folks on the Infrastructure Council or the Sustainable Infrastructure Committee that I chair, working through some of this. And so, you know, in the end, I think the fiscal note was the thing that really kind of held members up in my committee. But it was really enjoyable to sit down and actually work collaboratively with some of this.
Thank you,
Madam
Chair. Representative Cagle, it was my understanding that there was not consensus from that task force. You did mention, you know, first I think we should just take a pause right there. There was not consensus of how to proceed and whether there was any concrete recommendation and understand that. But then pushing forward, you'd mentioned the fiscal cost of what you're proposing, and you're continuing to, through this bill, work on your own regardless of what lack of consensus on that task force. With your A5 amendment, you'd mentioned that you're trying to minimize the fiscal impact. And just for the public, with the fiscal note, we've got space costing out in the out years, ramping up to like $57,000, the executive director salary of $252,000 plus, chief financial officer near $200,000 a year, the deputy director over $200,000. Some smart costs, even as much as, you know, mileage for the task force, so over $1,000 per diems, over $3,000, even lunch over $2,000. What in your A5 amendment is going to be reduced by that amendment of this fiscal note, of those figures, what is going to be reduced and in what manner?
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Speaker, Representative Kosnick. So being housed within the Department of Admin, they won't need office space. That's something that they can be absorbed. IT also, they won't need a CFO because that's something that admin already has. And so those are just a few of the things. I've been working with Department Admin, you know, to try and work through some of the assumptions that on the fiscal note. And so there are quite a few things that are going to be pulled off because of the housing and IT. And I also, with the task force, the one thing that we didn't put in was actual language for the legislation. That was the thing that we pulled out of the report. And the report was approved. I think there was one dissent. So we did get the task force report approved, and this legislation is based on that task force report.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Cagle. I appreciate trying to absorb the cost within the state. I think when we're adding more task force and more requirements and responsibilities, that's how we've grown government, over 40% in the last biennium. This bill, previous to your amendment, had a $1.4 million tails cost to this. You had mentioned Michigan. I believe they're spending about $3 million on something similar that you're trying to model this after. And so whether there's an amendment and you're trying to absorb it, there's still additional cost to the state to do that. And so I'm very concerned about that. In the future forecasts, we're projected to have a deficit, and this just continues to grow that. And so I have concerns on the fiscal cost, and additionally just the task force in general, just being advisory instead of and not regulatory, your words, I believe. Not sure that that's that this is the direction that we want to go with the cost, and you know, maybe these are well thought out ideas that should be utilized organically instead of legislatively.
Okay, Representative Bonner.
Thank you. I'll try to be quick here and combine my questions into one. I really appreciate that we have historic investments coming, and you know, coordination is really key. With about 20 years of project management experience, I appreciate your work, Representative Cagle, to work smarter and not harder, to reduce costs, particularly the fiscally sound choices to move this within. I appreciate that, as well as the greater efficiency. And with this, of course, comes great opportunity that we want to seize. So I have two questions. I'm going to combine them into one. Hopefully you can speak to them both. The first is, you, under this new structure, you move it to the Department of Public Administration. I wonder if you could speak briefly to the strengths and the skill sets within the Department of Administration and why you chose that path. And then secondly, you had mentioned Michigan had seen great savings there. And I know we are not Michigan, but if you have any potential examples or ways in which that their structure of doing some of this coordination helped to experience that return on investment.
And Chair Cagle, we do have admin here. I don't know if they're interested in coming forward or not, but please proceed with your answer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I haven't really been on a lot of the bonding committees, and so I wasn't real familiar with the work of admin until I started digging into this. And so learning about their sustainable enterprise office and all the good work that they're doing internally. And so I, you know, that was a conversation that we had between MMB and admin. And so I would love to hear what the strengths of admin are as well.
If you'll state your name for the record and begin your answer, please.
Madam Chair, members, Wayne Wislosky. I'm an assistant commissioner at Department of Administration. We do have an enterprise real property system. That's a tool we use to manage our state assets. And it gets to this issue of deferred maintenance. So how do we assess our state assets on a regular basis on a standardized way across the 19 state agencies that manage state-owned facilities? So that is a tool and model that we would look to. And as the author is indicating, Representative Cagle is indicating, we also have the Office of Enterprise Sustainability that is focused on how do we build resilience into our infrastructure. So we'd use both of those experiences, as well as some experience we have with some councils and boards that are, how do we best support the work of the council internally? So we'd use those best practices as well.
And I greatly appreciate the work that you do in admin. I would like to move on to Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Cleaver, and I just wanted to say thank you, Representative Cagle, for bringing this bill forward. I often think about the contradiction of the argument that growing government and the cost of that, but then when there is a catastrophic event or things that happen, and then we say, well, why wasn't there oversight over this particular situation, right? Or that we say that the cost is so great in ensuring that there's oversight, but then we don't look at the cost of human lives and the cost of rebuilding and the cost of destruction that runs into the millions, the hundreds of millions of dollars, when we could have just paid for the oversight, right? And so I really appreciate the thought of the thinking about how do we look at what could happen in the future so that we can prevent that now. And I think that for me personally, it is a government's job to step in and to ensure its assets protect people. And I really appreciate that you brought this bill forward. So I just wanted to say that.
Representative Nadeau, if you can be brief, please.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And the question is for you. Can you remind me where this bill, what are we, where's
the motion
bill?
Is to re-refer House File 4025 as amended to Ways and Means.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in, I'm looking at the, the fiscal section two of the, of A5. Do we, will this funding come out of our jurisdiction?
It will not.
Okay. Where will it come from, Madam Chair?
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Nudo. That's what, well, we're working on getting the revised fiscal note for Ways and Means. And so this is not the number that was the previous fiscal note. We just inserted that as a placeholder instead of the dot, dot, dots. Figured you guys would appreciate that. And then, yeah, and so ways it's going to Ways and Means. I've been lobbying very, very hard to get this covered out of hopefully a Ways and Means budget. I don't know. But then also, you know, I really think that we need to start, like, having foresight. You know, I don't put a tarp on my house and think that it's going to hold for, you know, 10 years. I'm going to put new shingles in a patch when that tree falls. And so I really think it's about, you know, looking at our return on investment. And, you know, we always hear the business argument, you got to spend money to make money. We got to invest money to make sure that we're doing the right thing and that we're saving taxpayer money down the line. We fix it first now, we're saving money down the line. We're helping save taxpayer money.
Representative Nadeau.
Well, and thank you. Thank you, Representative Cagle, for that. But, I mean, I'm looking at the fiscal note. I mean, this is, you know, you said we're going to admin, but this fiscal note is based on the Department of Admin at $28.75 a square foot, a hard-walled office, $30,000 to $100,000, a modular office of $20,000, a conference room that accommodates 29 individuals, $80,000, a conference table, $45,000 for a conference table, technology for the conference room, $20,000. So this is real money, and I mean, I haven't even gotten into the bill. I mean, I'm just on the fiscal note, and I'm gonna stop because we're out of time. But I'll talk to you offline about this, and I hope that the fiscal note comes back and it gets rid of the $45,000 conference table. I'll build one for that. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, and let's be fair. They're not buying a new table. It's just allocating the cost of tables they already have. It's space. Space costs money. Anyway, Representative Berg, if you can quickly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as you know, my bill, Buy Clean, came in front of your committee last year, and that one we got very lucky where industry, labor, and agency came together and everyone agreed. So we have a task force, too, that's been working on what does it look like to incorporate sustainable materials into our infrastructure, which also is really exciting because by default it will be Buy American, so it'll be manufacturing here, reducing our carbon footprint by importing things, and also we know American steel is cleaner. So all that being said, wondering if there's an opportunity for collaboration between both task force, kind of comprehensively and holistically looking at this. Thank you.
Thank you. And then we'll go to Representative, our lead Nash, and then we'll close up the bill. Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to start off by asking for a roll call.
A roll call has been requested.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Cagle, this is Madam Chair, thank you. Just want to make sure that Representative Berg was done. But this is a non-regulatory organization, and you're spending a lot of money on it. So my first observation of that is, if it's a non-regulatory, it means it has no teeth. So to use your example, it's not going to put a tarp on something. It's actually just talking about a tarp. I get very worried that we're going to spend this large amount of money on an organization that has no teeth to change something, because if they could talk about something, they could make a recommendation on something, but because they're non-regulatory, they can't affect the change. So that's troubling, because we've got other groups doing this. I think of, at least in the metro area, some of these things would be covered under Met Council. So now you've got a new board that you're going to stand up that's expensive, but they are going to possibly be in conflict with a potential recommendation of the Met Council. But you're spending a lot of money on them, and they have no teeth. If you would respond to that.
Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Nash, I think the savings in the infrastructure cost is going to be the thing that's going to really propel folks. I think the best practices and the infrastructure costs, even if they're not like actively participating in the, you know, let's say Longville, that's where my cabin is. Let's say they're not actively participating in the infrastructure or in this advisory council, they're still going to benefit because people in the sector then are going to get best practices and get recommendations from Representative Berg's task force. And so collaborating that information and getting best practices out and allowing people to know where to go to get those resources, I think is huge, because right now nobody knows where to go to get that information and find out you know, the best practices when it comes to asset management. And I do want to remind folks that with the A5 amendment, a lot of those assumptions in the fiscal note will go away. And so I would really, maybe I should have just put dot, dot, dots in there, because that is, you know, this is, the fiscal note will be revised, and I think that the cost will come down.
Reed Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I know we're up against time. Mm-hmm. The cost is not material to the comment that I just made. They don't have any teeth. So once again, and best practices were actually brought forward. I wish Chair Hornstein was here. We were talking about the pile driving and how it was going to impact the townhomes that were damaged. Those were best practices with a group that didn't listen to the recommendation, and what we wound up having is destruction of those places. So I can't support this because you're going to constitute an executive agency in the Department of Admin that has no teeth, cost a ton of money, and dot, 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 or your current fiscal note, it's going to be expensive. Why stand up a group that has no teeth, cost a ton of money, and a $45,000 allocation for a conference table? We'll talk more about it in Ways and Means, trust me. But it just confuses me why we would have this move forward with a group that says, hey, we're going to bring a bunch of, I think Representative Hewitt said, smart people into the room. And we're not going to give them any authority to affect change. It's just a recommendation that people could ignore, and yet we're going to pay a lot of money for it. So with that, I would urge a no vote, and I believe I did ask for a roll call.
A roll call has been requested.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Cagle, if you'll close up really quickly, and we'll go straight to the vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, you know, I just really want to emphasize that this is about foresight and looking at our return on investment. And so, you know, I'm not quite following Representative Nash's argument, but I'll be willing to change it to a regulatory body if that's what you prefer, Representative Nash. We can work on that language as well. But I think that this is a really smart investment, making sure that our money that is coming to the state from the federal government is being used wisely. In Michigan, it is a non-regulatory body, and they have seen participation from numbers of communities across their state. I would invite you to go back and watch the hearings that we've had in our Sustainable Infrastructure Committee, where the Michigan Infrastructure Council has come in and presented about what they have been doing as a non-regulatory body. And so with that, I really want to I hope for all of your support in making sure that we are investing our money wisely and getting the best return on our investment.
Thank you. And with that, I will renew our motion that House File 4025, as amended, be re-referred to Ways and Means. Please take the roll.
Chair Cleburne?
Aye.
Chair Cleburne, aye. Vice Chair Hewitt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hewitt, aye. Lead Nash?
No.
Lead Nash, no. Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Bonner, aye. Representative Berg?
Aye.
Representative Berg, aye. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Representative Freiberg, aye. Representative Hansen, excused. Representative Harder?
No.
Representative Harder, no. Representative Herr?
Aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Joy?
No.
Representative Joy, no. Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Kosnick, no. Representative Nadeau?
No.
Representative Nadeau, no. Representative Newton, excused. The ayes are 6, nays are 5, with 2 excused.
With 6 ayes, 5 nays, and 2 excused, the motion prevails, and House File 4025, as amended, is re-referred to Ways and Means. Members, I'd like to remind everyone that our next meeting will be on April 4th. And with that, we are adjourned.